They also, when they had settled their rulings in the nature of each bond's placement, called the name of it the null bond, with regard to its effect upon the souls of those caught in its grip. In this description, each was related to the bonds that drive Roshar itself. 10 surges, named in turn, and 2 for each order. In this light, it can be seen that each order would, by necessity, share 1 surge with each of its neighbors.
From Words of Radiance, Chapter 8, Page 6. Adolin threw his shard blade. Wielding the weapons was about more than just practicing stances and growing accustomed to the two-light swordplay. A master of the blade learned to do more with the bond. He learned to command it to remain in place after being dropped, and learned to summon it back from the hands of those who might have picked it up. He learned that man and sword were, in some ways, one. The weapon became a piece of your soul. Adolin had learned to control his blade in this way, usually. Today, the weapon disintegrated almost immediately after leaving his fingers. Adolin paced back and forth on the plateau, hand held out to the side as he resummoned the weapon.
10 heartbeats.
At times, it felt like an eternity. He wore his plate without the helm, which sat atop a nearby rock, and so his hair blew free in the early morning breeze. He needed the plate. His left shoulder and side were a mass of purple bruises. His head still ached from slamming into the ground during the assassin's attack last night. Without the plate, he wouldn't be nearly so nimble today. Besides, he needed its strength. He kept looking over his shoulder, expecting the assassin to be there. He'd stayed up all night last night, sitting on the floor outside his father's room, wearing plate, arms crossed on his knees, chewing ridge bark to stay awake. He'd been caught without his plate once. Not again.
And what will I do? Wear it all the time?
The part of him that asked such questions was rational. He didn't want to be rational right now. He shook the condensation from his blade, then twisted and hurled it. Once again, the weapon shattered to mist moments after it left his fingers. It didn't even cross half the distance to the rock formation he was aiming for.
What is wrong with me?
He'd mastered blade commands years ago. True, he hadn't often practiced throwing his sword. Such things were forbidden in duels, and he had never thought he'd need to use the maneuver. That was before he'd been trapped on the ceiling of a hallway, unable to properly engage an assassin. Adolin walked to the edge of the plateau, staring out over the uneven expanse of the shattered plains. A huddle of 3 guards watched him nearby.
Laughable. What will 3 bridgemen do if the assassin in white returns?
But Kaladin...
He was worth something in the attack. More than I was.
That man had been suspiciously effective. Renarin said that Adolin was unfair toward the bridgeman captain, but there was something strange about that man. More than his attitude, the way he always acted like by talking to you he was doing you a favor. The way he seemed so decidedly gloomy at everything. Angry at the world itself.
He's unlikable, plain and simple.
But Adolin had known plenty of unlikable people.
He's also strange.
Strange in ways Adolin couldn't explain.
Well, for all that, Kaladin's men are just doing their duty. No use in snapping at them.
So, he gave them a smile. Adolin's shard blade dropped into his fingers again, too light for its size. He had always felt a certain strength when holding it. Never before had Adolin felt powerless when bearing his shards. Even surrounded by the Parshendi, even certain he was going to die, he'd still felt power.
Where's that feeling now?
He spun and threw the weapon, focusing as Zael had taught him years before. Sending a direct instruction to the blade, picturing what he needed it to do. It held together, spinning end over end, flashing in the air. It sank up to its hilt into the stone of the rock formation.
Finally.
He released the blade, and it burst into mist.
Come.
He snatched his helm from the rock and walked toward the nearby war camp. As one might expect, the crater edge that formed the war camp wall was most weathered here in the east. The camp had spilled out like the contents of a broken turtle egg, and over the years had even started to creep down onto the near plateau. Emerging from that creep of civilization was a distinctly odd procession. The congregation of robed ardents surrounding parshmen who carried large poles upright like lances. Silk cloth shimmered between these poles, a good 40 feet wide, rippling in the breeze and cutting off the view of something in the center.
Soulcasters?
They didn't normally come out during the day.
Wait here.
Adolin jogged over toward the ardents. The parshmen carrying the poles watched him come, then looked down at the ground. Nearby, ardents let Adolin pass, though they looked uncomfortable. Adolin was allowed to see soulcasters, but having him visit them was irregular. Inside the temporary silk room, Adolin found Kadosh, one of the foremost of Dalinar's ardents. The tall man had once been a soldier, as the scars in his head testified. He spoke with ardents in blood-red robes. Soulcasters. It was the word for both the people who performed the art and the fabrials they used. Kadosh was not one himself. He wore the standard gray robes instead of red, his head shaven, face accented by a square beard. He noticed Adolin, hesitated briefly, then bowed his head in respect. Like all of the ardents, Kadosh was technically a slave. That included the 5 soulcasters. Each stood with right hand to breast, displaying a sparkling fabrial across the back of the palm. One of the ardents glanced at Adolin.
Stormfather, that gaze isn't completely human. Not any longer.
Prolonged use of the soulcaster had transformed the eyes so that they sparkled like gemstones themselves. The woman's skin had hardened to something like stone, smooth with fine cracks. It was as if the person were a living statue. Kadosh hustled over toward Adolin.
Bright Lord, I had not realized you were coming to supervise.
I'm not here to supervise. I'm just surprised. Don't you usually do this at night?
We can't afford to any longer, Bright One. There are too many demands upon the soulcasters. Buildings, food, removal of waste. To fit it all in, we're going to need to start training multiple ardents on each fabrial, then working them in shifts. Your father approved of this earlier in the week.
I see. Storms. We rely on these things a lot.
May we proceed, Bright One?
Adolin nodded, and Kadosh walked back to the 5 and gave a few brief commands. Adolin couldn't hear them, but saw that Kadosh spoke quickly, nervous. It was odd to see that in Kadosh, who was normally so placid and unflappable. Soulcasters had that effect on everyone. The 5 stepped forward and raised their hands in a line, and Adolin found his face breaking out in a sweat. At first, there was nothing, and then stone. Adolin thought he caught a brief glimpse of mist coalescing, like the moment a shard blade appeared, as a massive wall sprang into existence. Wind blew inward as if sucked by that materializing rock, making the cloth flap violently.
Why should the wind pull inward? Shouldn't it have been blown outward by the rock displacing it?
The large barrier abutted the cloth on either side, causing the silk screens to bulge outward and rose high into the air.
We'll need taller poles.
The stone wall had the same utilitarian look as the barracks, but this was a new shape. Flat on the side facing the war camps, it was sloped on the other side, like a wedge. Adolin recognized it as something his father had been deliberately building for months now.
A windbreak? That's wonderful, Kadosh.
Yes, well, your father seemed to like the proposal. A few dozen of these out here, and the construction yards will be able to expand onto the entire plateau without fear of high storms.
That wasn't completely true. You always had to worry about high storms, since they could hurl boulders and blow hard enough to rip buildings from their foundations. But a good solid windbreak would be a blessing of the Almighty out here in the Stormlands. The soulcasters retreated, not speaking with the other ardents. The parshmen scrambled to keep up, those on one side of the barrier running along behind it with their silk and opening the back of the room to let the new windbreak slip out of the enclosure. They passed by Adolin and Kadosh, leaving them exposed on the plateau and standing in the shade of the large new stone structure. The silk wall went back up, blocking sight of the soulcasters. Just before it did, Adolin noticed one of the soulcaster's hands. The Fabriel's glow was gone. Likely one or more of the gemstones in it had shattered.
I still find it incredible. Even after all these years, if we needed proof of the Almighty's hand in our lives, this is certainly it.
The Radiants could soul cast, couldn't they?
It is written that they could.
The Recreant, the term for the Radiant's betrayal of mankind, was often seen as a failure of Vorinism as a religion. The way the Church sought to seize power in the centuries that followed was even more embarrassing.
What else could the Radiants do? They had strange powers, right?
I have not read on it extensively, Bright One. Perhaps I should have spent more time learning about them, if only to remember the evils of pride. I will be certain to do this, Bright One, in order to remain faithful and remember the proper place of all Ardents.
Kaddish, I need information right now, not humility. The assassin in white has returned.
The disturbance at the palace last night? The rumors are true?
Yes. That assassin walked on the walls as if the pull of the earth were nothing to him. He fell 100 feet without injury. He was like a void bringer, death given form. So I ask you again, what could the Radiants do? Were abilities like these ascribed to them?
Those and more, Bright One. I spoke with some of the soldiers who survived that first terrible night when the old king was killed. I thought the things they claimed to have seen the result of trauma.
I need to know. Look into it. Read. Tell me what this creature might be capable of doing. We have to know how to fight him. He will return.
Yes, but Adolin? If what you say is true, storms, it could mean the Radiants are not dead.
I know.
Almighty preserve us.
Navani Kolin loved war camps. In ordinary cities, everything was so messy. Shops where they hardly belonged, streets that refused to run in straight lines. Military men and women, however, valued order and rationality. At least, the better ones did. Their camps reflected that. Barracks in neat rows, shops confined to marketplaces as opposed to popping up on every corner. From her vantage atop her observation tower, she could see much of Dalinar's camp.
So neat. So intentional.
This was the mark of humankind. To take the wild, unorganized world and make something logical of it. You could get so much more done when everything was in its place, when you could easily find what or whom you needed. Creativity required such things.
Careful planning is indeed the water that nourishes innovation.
She turned back toward the engineering grounds, which dominated the eastern section of Dalinar's war camp.
All right, everyone! Let's give it a try!
This test had been planned long before the assassin's attack, and she decided to proceed. The grounds below became a buzz of activity. Her elevated observation platform was perhaps 25 feet high and gave her a good view of the engineering grounds. She was flanked by a dozen different Ardents and scholars, and even Metane and a few other Storm Wardens. The object of her attention, and the subject of today's test, was a large circular platform at the center of the engineering yards. The wooden structure looked like the top of a siege tower that had been cut off and laid on the ground. Crenellations ringed it, and they'd set up dummies at those, the kinds that the soldiers used for archery practice. Next to that grounded platform was a tall wooden tower with a latticework of scaffolding up the sides. Workers scuttled over it, checking that everything was operational.
You really should read this, Navani.
Rishu was an Ardent and had no right whatsoever to have such lush eyelashes or delicate features. Rishu had joined the Ardentia to escape the advances of men. A silly choice, judging by the way male Ardents always wanted to work with her. Fortunately, she was also brilliant. And Navani could always find a use for someone brilliant.
I'll read it later. We have work to do now, Rishu.
Changed even when he was in the other room.
Rishu flipped to another page.
Repeatable and measurable. Only flames burn so far, but so many potential other applications.
Rishu, the test.
Oh, sorry, Brightness.
The woman tucked the folded pages into a pocket of her robes. Then she ran her hand across her shaved head, frowning.
Navani, have you ever wondered why the Almighty gave beards to men but not women? Well, for that matter, Why do we consider it feminine for a woman to have long hair? Should not more hair be a masculine trait? Many of them have quite a lot of it, you see.
Focus, child. I want you watching when the test happens.
That goes for all of you. If this thing crashes to the ground again, I don't want to lose another week attempting to figure out what went wrong.
The others nodded, and Navani found herself growing excited, some of the tension from the night's attack finally bleeding away. She went over the protocols for the test in her head. People moved out of danger, ardents on various platforms nearby, watching intently with quills and paper to record, stones infused. Everything had been done and checked three times over. She stepped up to the front of her platform, holding the railing tightly with free hand and gloved safe hand, and blessed the Almighty for the distracting power of a good fabrial project. She'd used this one at first to divert herself from worrying about Yasna, though she'd eventually realized that Yasna would be fine. True, reports now said the ship had been lost with all hands, but this wasn't the first time that supposed disaster had struck Navani's daughter. Yasna played with danger as a child played with a captive Kremling, and she always came through. The assassins return, though.
Oh, Stonefather. If he took Dalinar as he did Gavilar...
Give the signal! We've checked everything more times than is useful!
The Ardents nodded and wrote via span read to the workers below. Navani noticed with annoyance that a figure in blue shard plate had wandered onto the engineering grounds, helm under arm, exposing a messy mop of blonde hair speckled black. The guards were supposed to have kept people out, but such prohibitions would not apply to the High Prince's heir.
Well, Adolin knows how to keep his distance. I hope.
She turned back to the wooden tower. Ardents at the top had activated the fabrials there, and now climbed down the ladders at the sides, unhooking latches as they went. Once they were down, workers carefully pulled the sides away on their rollers. Those were the only things that had been holding the top of the tower in place. Without them, it should fall. The top of the platform, however, remained in place, hanging impossibly in the air. The only thing connecting it to the ground was a set of two pulleys and ropes, but those offered no support. That square, thick section of wood now hung in the air, completely unsupported.
Now for the real test.
Navani waved, and the men below worked the cranks on the pulleys, pulling down the floating section of wood. The archer parapet nearby shook, wobbled, then began to rise into the air in a motion exactly the opposite to the squares.
It's working!
The ancient engineer, Falilar, scratched his ardent beard.
I don't like that wobble. That ascent should be smoother.
It's not falling. I'll settle for that.
Wind's willing. I'd have been up there. I can't see even a sparkle from the gemstones. Well, what if they're cracking?
Then we'll find out eventually.
Though, in truth, she wouldn't have minded being on top of the rising parapet herself. Dalinar would have had a heart attack if he'd learned of her doing such a thing. The man was a dear, but he was a touch overprotective.
In the way a high storm is a touch windy.
The parapet wobbled its way upward. It acted as if it were being hoisted, though it had no support at all. Finally, it peaked. The square of wood that had been hanging in the air before was now down against the ground and tied in place. The round parapet hung in the air instead, slightly off kilter. It did not fall. Adolin clomped up the steps to her viewing platform.
Hey! Is that platform flying?
You only just now noticed this, dear.
I've been distracted, Aunt. Huh. That's really odd.
What?
Well, it's like...
Him.
The assassin, who had, according to both Adolin and Dalinar, somehow manipulated gravity spren. Navani looked to the scholars.
Why don't you all go down and have them lower the platform? You can inspect the gemstones and see if any broke.
The others heard it as a dismissal and went down the steps in an excited bunch. The Rishu remained.
Dear Rishu.
Oh, it would be better to watch from up here, in case...
I will speak with my nephew, alone,
please.
Rishu finally blushed, then bobbed a bow and hastened away. Adolin stepped up to the railing. It was difficult to not feel dwarfed by a man wearing plate, and when he reached out to hold the railing, she thought she could hear the wood groan from the strength of that grip.
He could have snapped that rail without a second thought. I will figure out how to make more of that.
While she was no warrior, there might be things she could do to protect her family. The more she understood the secrets of technology and the power of Spren locked within gemstones, the closer she grew to finding what she sought.
Aunt, a glove.
Far more practical.
She held up her safe hand and wiggled the fingers.
Oh, don't look like that. Dark-eyed women do it all the time.
But you're not dark-eyed.
I'm the Dowager Queen. Nobody cares what in damnation I do. I could prance around completely nude, and they'd all just shake their heads and talk about how eccentric I am.
How did you do it?
Conjoined fabrials. The trick was finding a way to overcome the structural weaknesses of the gemstones, which succumb easily to the multiplied strain of simultaneous infusion drain and physical stress.
She caught Adolin's eyes glazing over. He was a bright young man when it came to most social interactions, but he didn't have a single scholarly breath in him. Navani smiled, switching to layman's terms.
If you split a fabrial gemstone in a certain way, you can link the two pieces together so they mimic each other's motions, like a span reed.
Ah, right.
Well, we can also make two halves that move opposite one another. We filled the floor of that parapet with such gemstones and put their other halves in the wooden square. Once we engage them all, so they're mimicking one another in reverse, we can pull one platform down and make the other go up.
Huh. Can you make this work on a battlefield?
Proximity is a problem right now. The farther the pairs grow from one another, the weaker their interaction. And that causes them to crack more easily. You don't see it with something light like a span reed, but when working with heavy weights, well, we can probably get them working on the shattered planes. That's our goal right now. You could roll one of these out there, then engage it, and write back to us via reed. We pull the platform here down. Your archers get raised up 50 feet to gain a perfect archery position.
The enemy wouldn't be able to topple it or climb it. Stormfather, the tactical advantage.
Exactly.
Well, you don't sound enthusiastic.
I am, dear. But this isn't the most ambitious idea we've had for this technique. Not by a faint breeze or a storm wind. It's all very technical and theoretical right now. But just wait. When you see the things the Ardents are imagining...
Not you.
I'm their patron, dear. I don't have time to make all the diagrams and figures, even if I were up to the task. They suffer me.
Surely it's more than that.
Perhaps in another life it could have been. She was sure some of them saw her as a colleague. Many, however, just saw her as the woman who sponsored them, so she'd have new fabrials to show off at parties. Perhaps she was just that.
I assume you're here to escort me to the meeting.
I am.
They started down the wide steps together.
Aunt, have you been, doing anything to encourage my father's advances? Between you two, I mean.
Encourage him? I did more than that, child. I practically had to seduce the man. Your father is certainly stubborn.
I hadn't noticed. You realize how much more difficult you've made his position. He's trying to force the other High Princes to follow the codes using the social constraints of honor. Yet he's pointedly ignoring something similar.
Ugh, a bothersome tradition.
You seem content to ignore only the ones you find bothersome, while expecting us to follow all the others.
Of course. You haven't figured that out before now?
Adolin's expression grew grim.
Don't sulk. You're free from the causal for now, as Yasna has apparently decided to gallivant off someplace. I won't have the chance to marry you off quite yet. At least, not until she reappears.
Knowing her, that could be tomorrow, or it could be months from now.
I'm not sulking.
Of course you're not. Let's go to the palace. I don't know if your father will be able to delay the meeting for us if we're tardy.